everyone, and welcome back to another week on the podcast. We are continuing our Women's Health Month here in October, so I have another amazing guest here on the show this week. We have Karen Mannion, who is a qualified naturopathic nutritional therapist and mindset coach. Karen is super passionate and curious about health and how the body heals, specifically around the area of female hormonal health and excess estrogen-dominant conditions. These include fibroids, endometriosis, and painful periods. She combines nutrition and mindset coaching to help women achieve optimal health and life goals. And today we're going to be diving in and chatting about fibroids. So let's listen in to our conversation with Karen. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. I have Karen Mannion here on the show. So welcome to the show, Karen.
I'm super excited to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me, Kate. It's very, very exciting to be here. For me, I'm in the UK, so it's 7:30 in the morning. And as we spoke about before, I'm not too much of a morning person. So this is a new experience for me.
Well, I got off easy because it's afternoon here. 4:30.
What time is it over there? 4:30. Oh, you lucky lady. 7:30 in the morning here. Too early for me. I'm just beginning to realize I'm not a morning person, but there you go.
Well, we'll do our best anyway. See if you can share some amazing information with our listeners. So can you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes. So my name is Karen Mannion and I go by the health creator on social media. But I am a nutritional therapist and also a mindset coach. So with regards to the mindset coaching, I have a qualification in something called neuro-linguistic programming or NLP. And that's a form of therapy that helps look at how the structure of our thinking can either help or hinder us. So with a combination of nutrition and also mindset coaching, I help women usually during the perimenopausal years to make a transition, just to make that easier, because during the perimenopause, it can be quite a big life stage change. Periods start to go a bit awry. Women might start to struggle with things like anxiety and depression. Health status can change. So I tend to use both mindset coaching, so helping women to feel better about themselves and helping them to really improve their nutritional status to make that transition during the perimenopause a lot easier. Because I think the perimenopause is one of those times that I think a lot of us don't really understand very well. And it can have a huge impact on both our mental well-being and our physical well-being. So my goal really is to help as many women as possible just feel better about themselves during that life stage.
Yeah, so I can imagine that those two, as you said, really pair very well together, because it's not just, I guess, the physical changes that you may be experiencing, but it's emotional changes that you'll be navigating. And it's very different for every woman as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, during that time, many women are going through big changes because, they may be doing very, very well in their work. So they've got a lot of pressure at work. They may have children as well. So they've got larger number of responsibilities. And I think the level of stress can have an impact on, their mental well-being and just can create a lot of pressure. So, and it's just something that many women just don't expect. So they have these hormonal changes that are taking place. Very often anxiety is quite, can be a big part of the perimenopausal journey. And being able to juggle, family, work, perhaps caring, we're now, in a pandemic, so caring for members of your family as well. It's a big pressure. And then having this big hormonal change where your body starts making all these physical changes can be quite stressful and in some cases quite traumatic. So being able to navigate your way through that in a place of peace you know, and it really makes a big difference. And I think it's also a time of shedding old, it's about a time of shedding old beliefs about yourself and walking into a new kind of era for yourself, you know, letting go of old beliefs about yourself and thinking about moving forward. As we age, we can age gracefully and with joy and with love. And, you know, I think there's this whole idea of, you know, as you get older, what are your, you know, what is your purpose in life? Where are you going? What's new? So it's really about looking at aspects of identity and also, you know, beliefs. Looking at improving beliefs around a person's physical and mental kind of outlook as well.
Yeah. And do you have your own sort of personal journey that kind of got you or led you in towards specializing in this field? Because most of the people that I talk to, do you know what I mean? They're passionate about, you know, the area that they work in because there's some sort of personal connection to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a very recent journey as well, actually. So, I mean, I've been practicing for probably about 5 years now. But I am a, well, I've had a condition called fibroids. And I had my first set of fibroids about 10 years ago. So fibroids are growths that can occur in and around the uterus of a woman. And they, for many women, they can be asymptomatic, you know, they can be quite small, and for other women they can grow quite large, either in or around the uterus. So about 10 years ago, I was back at that time I was a personal trainer, and I remember going running and I'm feeling what felt like a bag of rocks jiggling around in my uterus, and I just had no idea what they were. So I went to my doctors and I just thought, what are these things? You know, I was really afraid because I felt I was very, very fit and healthy, you know, was a personal trainer, was very, very fit. And I discovered that I had these growths called fibroids. And so I was told that I knew nothing about them at the time. And I was told that, you know, get them taken out and you should have no more worries. At the time, I had met my boyfriend, who is now my husband. And we were told that, you know, it's going to improve your fertility chances. So I had a keyhole surgery, looking back now, there were so many things that I wish I'd known, but I had keyhole surgery. I'd got four of the biggest ones taken out. So the largest tumor was, they're non-cancerous, by the way, but the largest tumor was around 9 centimeters in diameter. So that's quite large. It's probably the size of, yeah, you know, a big grapefruit. So I got four of them taken out, thought that's it, I'm fine, you know, keyhole surgery 10 years ago, so I was a lot younger, you know, jumped off the operating table, thought I'd be fine. And and in actual fact, I discovered that during surgery, one of my fallopian tubes had been blocked. So in actual fact, there is a risk in terms of having surgery. And in actual fact, I never after that did conceive. So it was a really, you know, difficult time for us. I put that aside and I thought, well, it had a big impact on me. And I had wanted to do nutrition. I had wanted to study nutrition for a long time, and I just thought, well, this is the time to do it now. I really want to understand a lot more about what had happened to me, and I wanted to understand a lot more about the female body, because I don't think I really understood it very well at all. So I embarked on this journey. I studied, I did a diploma in nutritional therapy, and I have been practicing now, as I say, for about 5 years, and I've just learned so much. And the interesting thing now is I am going through a perimenopausal journey. And there are so many aspects of fibroids that I didn't know about, and I'm only just beginning to learn about now. So you can have them taken out, but it's a condition of hormonal imbalance. So just cutting out these tumors doesn't actually really make too much of a difference unless you're actually addressing the root cause, which is a hormonal imbalance. So my fibroids, many were left in. So as I said before, 10 years ago, the four of the largest ones were taken out, but many were left in. So all this time, I was still, you know, perhaps doing, you know, for about five of those years, I was still perhaps doing some of the things that were not conducive to a healthy body. So I was still eating sugar, still drinking alcohol, still not managing my stress very well, still eating foods that were creating higher levels of estrogen in my body. And I recently had 28 fibroids removed from my from around my uterus. And that was actually just 5 months ago. And yeah, so I'm, you know, 49 now, going through the perimenopause. Again, thinking that I was really healthy, but we're going through a pandemic. It's a very stressful time. I'm also going through the perimenopause. And it felt like I just experienced this huge growth. Within just a few months, you know, I felt like I had no control. I just had this huge expansion in my abdomen. I looked like I was really pregnant. And these fibroids are just growing, they were just out of control. So I just decided that I was going to get them removed again. The surgeon, I didn't want my uterus removed, because one of the two of the options are, you can either have your uterus removed, so a full hysterectomy, or you can go for a myomectomy where the actual tumors are removed. And I just thought, well, that's what I want. I just wasn't ready to lose my whole womb. So yeah.
And changing, even more hormonal changes come with that on top of that as well.
Absolutely. So I just made the decision to have the fibroids removed. There were 28 of them. It was quite a long surgery. And it so far, the recovery process has been, touch wood, okay. There are still a few little imbalances that I need to address. I'm still having very slightly painful periods, but some of the symptoms of fibroids can be horrendous. So, you know, just before I had my surgery, I had really heavy, heavy periods, like really large clots, passing clots the size of my fists. It was just disgusting. And really painful periods, really just being laid out for days on end and feeling really miserable. It really hugely impacts your mental health. You just really feel just very much down in the dumps. And it just took me by surprise. It just completely knocked me out, because I've always considered myself quite fit and healthy. Knowing what I know, the perimenopause can be a time where huge hormonal transitions take place. You have these great surges in estrogen, so you can experience something called hyperestrogenism, where you get much higher amounts of estrogen being produced than you would if you were just, you know, in your child rearing life stage. So high levels of estrogen can have a huge impact on the production of or the growth of fibroids, and that's where I think things went a bit wrong for me.
Yeah, and do you know what I mean? A lot of people may be sort of listening in and sort of obviously know that estrogen is a female hormone, but they might not know what else can sort of, you know, push it up. So can you share some of the other things that might be pushing estrogen up in our body?
Yeah, so I would say probably that one of the major things is stress. So stress, in a very simple way, can impact our blood sugar. I would say it can cause inflammation. So on a very basic level, it can disrupt. An easy way to understand it is it can disrupt our metabolism. So it can change the way in which we generate energy. Usually, in a healthy body, the body will generate energy in a way where we use a lot of oxygen. But if we are perhaps malnourished, and our cells are not able to, perhaps our blood sugar levels are quite high and our cells are not necessarily able to process all that energy, then our cells start to generate energy without oxygen, or something called aerobic respiration. And that's where our cells start to actually produce substances that cause us to that put us into a disease state. And we can begin to develop tissue, rogue tissue, such as, you know, in some cases cancer cells, but also fibroids, endometriosis, types of tissue where they generate their own kind of blood vessels. And this is something called hypoxia. It's something I'm really into, but I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But it's it's, you know, when our system is just out of balance, we're not generating energy in the right way, we can then start to develop a disease state. And it's an opportunity for tissue to grow that really shouldn't be there. So things like fibroids, endometriosis, cancer. So stress, just increasing inflammation in our system. So it's, stress can happen either through our thinking. So our thinking can raise cortisol levels, the stress hormone cortisol levels, which can increase inflammation. But also when we're stressed, we tend to embark on behaviors that are not necessarily conducive of a healthy body, right? So when we're stressed, we may tend to take on a lot of things like emotional eatings. So when we're, you know, when we're stressed, when we're anxious, when we're depressed, even when we're bored, we might find ourselves doing things such as emotional eating. And usually the type of eating that we're doing is eating that is not necessarily good for us. So we might be eating foods that are high in sugar, processed foods, sweets, crisps, biscuits, chocolates, that kind of thing. And that can also increase inflammation in our system. And an interesting thing about raising inflammation levels, raising blood sugar levels in our system, is that it can actually also raise insulin levels. And higher levels of insulin can actually raise our sex hormone levels. So estrogen can be one of those. So chronically high levels of sugar in our blood, insulin in our blood, can raise estrogen levels as well, which can have an impact on the growth of estrogenic tissue, such as endometriosis and fibroids. We hear a lot about toxins and plastics, which can have an impact and can have an estrogenic effect on our system as well, so making us a little bit more estrogenic. And also genetically, I think this is something, you know, I've just gone all out now. I'm trying to learn as much as I can about this condition. But in terms of genetics, there are a couple of issues around estrogen receptors. So we can have estrogen receptors that are not as effective. So they may not necessarily, estrogen may not necessarily be able to hook on to these receptors as effectively as we would like, which means that there is a lot more free flowing estrogen within our system, going around our system and having an impact on increasing our general estrogen levels. And then also detoxification is a very important aspect of fibroids. So we need to be able to make sure that we are detoxifying any excess estrogen that is not used in our system. So usually our liver is responsible for a large part of the detoxification of estrogen. But our liver can do all this great work and can package up these excess toxins that will then be dumped into the gastrointestinal tract to be got rid of via our stools. But if our gastrointestinal tract isn't balanced, so if we don't have a good, well-balanced level of good gut bacteria, we can have some gut bacteria which will actually recycle estrogen around our system. They produce a substance called beta-glucuronidase, which will recycle estrogen around our system. So it's really important that we have a very healthy, robust set of bacteria in our gastrointestinal tract to help us get rid of excess estrogen on a daily basis. So that means having a very well-balanced diet with lots of fiber, but also we need to make sure that we are very nutritionally replete. So we're getting a good amount of vitamins and minerals in our diet every single day, because our liver needs a lot of nutrients in order to do its job of detoxification. So there are lots of factors. I think I've just gone on a bit there.
You know, it's coming back to that holistic model of health. And, you know, you can make some changes in your diet, but if you've still got really high stress levels, do you know what I mean? And you might be using, say, personal care products that are, you know, loaded with toxins and things, you might not see too much shift until you start coming at it from different angles. And it's obviously going to be different for everybody as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does depend on what specifically is going on. I mean, what was really interesting when I actually had the fibroids, I just sort of took a little peek and a little look at a couple of forums where women were struggling with fibroids. And one thing that I think really struck out for me was that many women were going into hospital, having the operation, and then carrying on with the same lifestyle habits that they had before they had the operation, which is pointless because, you know, as I say, it's a hormonal imbalance, and it's a lifestyle. It's also kind of like a lifestyle disease. You have to start to completely change some of the habits that you have in the first place, you know, so things like managing stress, things like getting a well-balanced diet, things like improving sleep, because sleep can actually increase inflammation as well. Looking at what household products and plastics and, you know, personal care products you're using that might be having an impact on your body, and just complete also looking at your thought processes as well. What I find really interesting, especially when I work with a lot of my clients, is that our thought processes can reveal subconsciously chronic low-lying levels of stress because of some of the thinking that we're thinking. So certain beliefs that are low level but chronic can actually have this impact of just keeping us in a heightened state of stress, but it's low level, it's chronic, and it's kind of silent, because unless you're awake to what it is that's creating these thinking patterns, how are you going to stop it? So it's really about looking at our thinking. You're right, it is holistic. It's looking at our diet, it's looking at our lifestyle, and looking at so many different aspects, and look and deciding to have a complete revamp, really making complete changes, you know, because as we get older, as we move into our more mature years, our wiser years, our most fabulous years, we need to really start imagining that our bodies are kind of vintage cars that need a lot more love than they did perhaps when we were 20 or 30 years ago.
Oh, and I think too that, you know, some things that might have worked for you in your younger years, or do you know what I mean, the level of fiber you were eating when you were in your 20s, it might need to change when you hit your 40s or your 50s, you know, depending, our bodies change and what we require changes. So I think that's another thing to highlight as well.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's funny because I think I was saying to you earlier, Kate, that I've been running some nutrition workshops, and they've been for very young people. So when you're young, you know, you can get away with just eating all kinds of crap and not having it having no impact on your system, you having feeling great, eating a lot of rubbish. But, you know, as we get older, you know, I think our health can become depleted if we're not paying attention. We do need to begin to think as we get older about looking after our health, and just being a lot more aware. So, you know, the older we get, the more care we need to be giving to ourselves, you know, and we can't get away with drinking loads of alcohol or having lots of sugary foods or, you know, not paying attention to our thoughts. You know, the older we get, the more we need to start to take care of our health. And I know in the UK, I feel that, you know, we are taught to read and write, you know, we're taught to understand how much money we have in the bank, but we're not necessarily taught to understand how much health do we have in our tank. You know, how do we manage our health? How do we look after it? How do we recognize when things are not going so well? We're often told, you know, to go to our GP, you know, find out what's wrong. But what about health? Health is a completely different concept. You know, it's something that we have to really take responsibility for and take care of ourselves. We can be in control of that, but I do feel that there seems to be this kind of philosophy that, you know, health is something that you put into somebody else's hands. You know, you give it to the health, you put it in the hands of your doctor, but we should be responsible for that. And that's just something that, you know, I probably only really realized in the past sort of 15 years or so, you know. And I just think younger people these days, when I'm giving these workshops, I'm always trying to encourage them to begin to start to take control now, because what you do in your young years can have an impact when you're in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s. But so, you know, just start to pay attention now, you know, when you're young, and keep these lovely habits of, you know, just very simple things of eating a nice balanced diet, of eating very colourful foods, of eating foods high in fibre, staying hydrated, sleeping well, learning how to listen to your thoughts, respecting your thoughts, and not eating them down with, you know, crappy foods, but you know, using healthy foods to keep you feeling balanced and, you know, with a nice mental, happy mental health, as it were. I mean, it's a difficult road to navigate, right?
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I kind of feel like, you know, in school you were given some nutrition knowledge, but it was very general and it was the same for everyone. Whereas I feel as I've gotten older, female health and what we need for our bodies is very different, you know, for our hormones compared to males. Wasn't talked about at all, you know, even as a teenager, you know, you can start and experience painful periods and, you know, the general consensus was go visit your doctor and you can usually get a medication for that. You know, there's usually something you can take that will help that. Not already from those younger years thinking, okay, well, what are you actually, you know, putting into your body? What are you putting on your body? You know, what is your stress level like? Maybe you're over-exercising, you know, maybe you're a teenage athlete, you know, I'm not sure. But I feel like if there had been a little bit more emphasis on female health and hormones, even from a younger age, it really would aid women as we get older.
I think you're right, actually. It's interesting you talk about, you know, females and young females and over-exercising is quite a big thing these days, you know, for young females. And it reminds me of a time when I was, you know, when I was young, I was an athlete. So I would exercise, you know, I would train 5 times a week. And I think what I look back now, and I think it's possible to be very, very fit, but not necessarily very healthy. And with our female hormone hormones, we really need to learn to recognize that our hormonal health is a sign of our general health. You know, our periods are a sign of our general health. And, you know, the more I sort of practice and I'm working with some young women and realizing, you know, very often, you know, many women, young women may be struggling with painful periods. And it takes quite a while for young women for the estrogen receptor cells to really be working well, you know, from their teenage years up into their early 20s. So it takes quite a bit of time for this to be well regulated. And very often if a young woman is struggling with painful periods or very heavy periods, the go-to for a GP might be to just put them on the pill. But this actually just suppresses the woman's own body to be able to do things. And then, you know, we've got issues such as PCOS that arise or just periods that are just not coming. So we have to, I think we kind of need to celebrate the fact that we have periods. We need to celebrate the fact that we have a different set of hormones that help us to function and thrive and to really understand these hormonal cycles that we go through and learn to actually work with our hormones. So our body has this cycle and there are certain parts of the cycle where perhaps we have a higher amount of energy. We perhaps feel we have higher levels of our libido. We're more sociable. It's a time where we can actually perhaps work out a lot more because we feel stronger at certain times, you know, the earlier part of our cycle, you know, we have higher levels of testosterone. And then in the second half of our cycle, you know, we're producing the pregnancy hormone, progesterone, and it's a very gentle, lovely hormone. It's about being an antidepressant, but we need to slow down. We might feel a little bit more tired. We might feel a little bit more sluggish. And it's about learning to recognize that we need to work with our hormones. We need to get in touch with how they make us feel. And we need to work with them and do what we feel is right. But we're just on this kind of conveyor belt of just convenience foods, just go, 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 not listening to ourselves, not listening to what's going on inside our bodies. And things just start going awry. So also, you know, I just think that what's really interesting to me is something that I've learned is that there are factors that are genetic in terms of developing fibroids, and I imagine probably definitely PCOS and endometriosis, but there are factors that are genetic. So for me, I learned that fibroids, you know, women of color, obviously I'm a woman of color, but I think women of color are three to four times more likely to get fibroids than my Caucasian cousins, for instance, European white women. Things like low levels of vitamin D, you know, high BMI is also a risk factor. I've never really been somebody who has struggled with a high BMI because I've also always been quite fit and healthy, but it is one of those risk factors. Starting your periods very young, having very, very painful periods is also another risk factor. being perimenopausal. You know, this is a time where it's really treacherous. You know, you have these high spikes of estrogen, that is also a risk factor. And then there's a genetic element. So there is a specific gene that is related to having fibroids, and it's called the MED12 gene. This is something I've only just realized recently. And it can mutate in women who develop fibroids, and it can start, you know, in your mother's uterus. So you have to have a certain number of set of conditions that need to occur. So if your mother is stressed during the pregnancy, this can begin to set up a cascade where perhaps this gene can mutate. And again, it depends on what are the conditions like once you're born. And then there are certain factors that need to occur during your teenage years. Perhaps you have a high BMI, perhaps you're in a really stressful situation. It doesn't necessarily switch on the gene. It depends on what conditions are going on. So it's really important, again, during those developmental years, to make sure that you are, you know, in a stable environment, that you are being loved and you are being looked after, and that you feel happy and balanced. So there are so many aspects to our hormones and what can turn us into a disease, put us into a disease state. There's so much to learn.
Yeah. And you bring up a couple of things. I think one of the things I wanted to highlight is that it is important to talk to your mum or your grandma or the people family and find out, maybe, you know, maybe your grandma suffered from fibroids or endometriosis, and, you know, see if there is genetic links to those types of conditions and diseases that can pop up. So I think that's one thing, you know, to be aware of, that if you haven't done that within your family tree, it might be worth doing it. But also, you sort of brought up that, you know, genetics plays a part, but those environmental factors, or those epigenetics, as we tend to call them, you know, can determine whether or not that gene is going to be expressed or not. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you're going, oh, well, yeah, my mum had fibroids, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to, but it does mean that maybe you need to be looking at the amount of stress in your life. What are you putting in and feeding your body? You know, are you doing exercises that are going to be supportive and not producing more inflammation and stress? You know, the more anaerobic, the weights, or, you know, not too heavy a weight. It's like Pilates and yoga, where there's a focus on breath and slowing down, or, you know, you don't want to overdo it by really fatiguing your adrenals by, you know, training for marathons or things like that. So I think that's another thing maybe to highlight as well.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it just reminds me of a couple of ladies that I've been working with recently, whereby, you know, they are, you know, we think that exercise is really healthy for us, and it is. But it depends, again, on your health status. So if you are feeling in a state of just inflammation, and perhaps you're feeling really fatigued, really tired, then high level intensity cardio is not going to be the kind of exercise you want to be doing, right? You want to be looking at things that are restorative, you know, so as you say, Pilates, yoga, walking, slowing things down. So you're actually moving the body, you're giving it what it needs, but you're not actually putting it in a state of heightened inflammation. And it is interesting when you start to do a bit of testing to understand, you know, how cortisol can have a huge impact. You know, very often when I'm working with women and they've got, you know, they've got some imbalances and they're really tired, and they say, well, but I'm working really hard, you know, I'm really working out and I'm doing lots of exercise. And then you kind of get them doing some of these tests, and, you know, then you realize that their cortisol levels are through the roof, or they've got very little cortisol at all. In fact, you know, their body is saying, I want you to stop, so I'm not even going to give you any cortisol. You know, I'm going to put you on the floor so that you can just completely just chill out and stop working out, because you're tired and you're depleted, you know. So I think you're absolutely right. You know, it really does depend on your health status. Restorative exercise really does have a huge part to play in healing and also balance in life and health, you know.
Yeah, and the balance can obviously look different for everybody, depending on, you know, your health status, and as I said, whether or not you've got hormonal issues and things. But I think that's sometimes one area that maybe women don't think about when it comes to hormones. They think, oh, yeah, I know I'm meant to be eating better, and I know I'm meant to be drinking my water, but, you know, I'm exercising, and that's great for my body, so I'll just keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, I think if you're healthy and you're not suffering with any kind of symptoms, then that's fine. You know, but I think what's really important is we need to keep an eye. We need to monitor our health. We really need to pay attention to what is going on. We need to listen in on our symptoms. We need to listen in on how we're feeling. And if everything's OK, then that's OK. You know, but I think if we start to ignore symptoms and we think, well, you know, I know I should be doing this, I know I should be doing that, but I'm exercising. Something that's really interesting to me is I've recently spoken to a couple of people who say, oh, but I've got a really high metabolism, you know, I can get away with eating a load of crap, I'm fine. And, you know, that doesn't mean the body doesn't need health. It still needs healthy food and it still needs hydration and it still needs, you know, good sleep. The body just needs healthy, real, whole food. That's it. Regardless of whether we've got a high metabolism, the body still needs health. And just ignoring that can have a huge impact on negative impact on how we feel and our hormones as well.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to point out is you may have a high metabolism, but you can still have low grade inflammation happening within your body. And you might not see the effects of that now, but as you get older, for your longevity, if you really, you know, want to stick around for a long period of time, these sort of things you need to be paying attention to.
Absolutely, Kate. Now, I remember you telling me that you also have struggled with a hormonal issue as well. What I find really interesting is, you know, did you speak to your mother and your sisters about it? Or how did you discover that you had these issues?
Yeah, so I spoke to my mum about it, but it's funny though, sometimes, you know, when they, my mum was like, oh, I can't really remember, you know, but diving into our, you know, it was a long time ago, you're not there, she's, you know, nearly 70 now, but, she, you know, my auntie passed away from cervical cancer. So there are genetic links within our family tree. So we did go through a lot of those. So yeah, I dive into that side of it as well. I spoke to my sister and checked out things with her and how she was. I also did just a lot of research and, you know, like you were saying, went through my diet, being a nutritionist, knowing that, you know, my diet was really good, but then learning things like, you know, raw carrot is amazing for helping to balance and reduce estrogen. So I'm eating raw carrot daily. So there's always something that you can learn. And for me, it was just adding in, I guess, even more nutrients where I could and being really aware of my stress. So, you know, we've had some family issues with people being really unwell. That was something that I had to really pay attention to, you know, running a business, having a family, looking after ill family members. So stress was, for me, was a really big one. But sort of, as we were saying before, it's going to look a little different for
my sort of skincare and all the rest of it, no
sort of pollutant house cleaning, stuff like that. So I'd done that quite a while ago. So I knew it wasn't that side of it.
Yeah.
So it was just trying to ramp up the other sides that I knew I had some things of work to do in. And no one's perfect. You can be, you know, a personal trainer or a nutritionist or whoever. There's always something that we can improve.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And I think it's different for different people in that one of the biggest things I feel that it really makes a difference is stress management. And I often find that, you know, stress management is one of those things that many women are not quite sure how to do. So when you ask somebody, oh, how do you relax? What do you do to relax? People would just sort of, you've got a tumbleweed moment because many women often don't know how to relax and what to do. And I think that trying to find a way to really get that in the muscle can have a big impact. So, I mean, I found for me now, daily, you know, a daily relaxation, restorative practice, such as yoga every single day, has a big impact for me in terms of just keeping me in that really nice, calm, relaxed state. And it is really simple, isn't it? It's all about stress management, and it is about just looking at your diet and asking yourself, is this food nutritionally dense? Is it going to give me some nutrition, or is it going to cause havoc within my system? It's that simple. But we are just so exposed to so many kind of convenience foods that are processed and high sugar. And it just makes life a little bit more tricky when making good decisions, especially when you're in a state of stress.
Yeah, and I think too, a lot of people also, you know, a lot of the packets of the food, there's so many ingredients and things in a lot of foods nowadays that people often think that they're eating something healthy when it's not. You know, we have a what they call a star system here. So, you know, okay. It'll rank how healthy this food is. But a lot of the time it's, you know, the companies pay for it too, so it's skewed. But, you know, the vegetable oils have got 4 stars. Now, we know that vegetable oils promote inflammation in the body. They should not be getting 4 stars. But, you know, so there's these sorts of things too that I think people sometimes battle with because, you know, they may look to that as reassurance, but it's not necessarily correct either.
No. And there's this idea that we don't have enough time to make our own meals or to batch cook. And I think really the trick is to try to prepare as many of your own meals as possible, because you will then understand and know what is in that food or what is in that meal. And that's really what it boils down to. It's really about understanding that if you can cook your own meals and they don't have to be complicated or, you know, it doesn't have to be rocket science, it can be something quick and easy to start with. It's really about what can you add into your diet that can help you to feel better. And as you say, I love your idea about eating more carrots. Something as simple as that can have a big impact, right? It's not, that's not difficult to do, is it? Grabbing a carrot and chomping on that.
That's it. And I will say, you know, some of my issues was I had extreme breast tenderness. I had issues with my, you know, clots and stuff with my period. Within a month, the breast tenderness had halved. You know, my periods were already a lot less. Within 3 months, the breast tenderness was gone. And that was, you know, I probably didn't even have a whole carrot every day. We're looking at, you know, up to half a carrot, whether or not I grated it, you know, over a salad or chomped on it, whatever it was. Just that obviously combined with the other things I was doing, you know, that was enough just to get that last little sort of bit and tip me over to sort of feeling like I was on top of it. So, you know, listeners, you know, sometimes you may be doing all the things, but it's just that one extra little thing that can be really simple to do, and it can just make the world a difference.
Yeah, interesting. So for me, it was turmeric. So I was having really, really painful just really painful prolonged periods. And turmeric is just a really, you know, hugely anti-inflammatory. We know there's lots of research around how miraculous it can be. And for me, I was having this pain in my leg and, you know, around my hip and around my uterus. And just, I would make this detox soup, you know, which was, you know, full of cruciferous vegetables to help make sure that I was excreting all my estrogen. But I put a whole load of turmeric powder in there. And it was amazing how literally overnight, the pain would just disappear. And it was that one thing, you know, so it's different for different people, but it can be just one or two ingredients that make a huge difference. And I, you know, one thing that I didn't mention was when I had my surgery, I had these fibroids removed, but then what had happened was that I'd been in such pain before the actual surgery that I'd created so much damage with ibuprofen, which is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, right? And so I was just, again, I was back in hospital a couple of times more with digestive issues, really severe digestive issues. Once I actually had to, I ended up with what's that really strong painkiller, I can't remember now, but I was in such pain. And I realized, you know, just doing a little bit of research, I realized that strawberries and strawberry powder actually has a similar impact to non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, so similar to ibuprofen, but without any of the problems that it causes. So, you know, ibuprofen can cause, can damage the gut lining, it can damage kidneys, and strawberries really just reduce inflammation without any of the horrible impact that ibuprofen has. So, you know, I've just changed my diet completely, and it's just been, you know, really eye-opening to recognize that food is just so powerful. But we've got to be consistent, and we've just got to be persistent and consistent and just keep going and have that habit as a lifestyle habit, not just something that we do just for, you know, a couple of months, because it can, you know, our body just needs good health all the time.
That's it. And like you were saying before, it doesn't have to be complicated. Your meals don't have to be hard and, you know, 50 ingredients. Just keep it really simple. Go back to your whole foods and you'll generally have a lot of success.
Absolutely. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, but like you said, you know, I think our world nowadays is a world of convenience. I mean, look, you can put an order in on Amazon and you've got the package at your house the next day, you know. Our attention spans are shorter. We are busier in the sense that, you know, people are most people are working with families on top of. It's not not the previous nuclear family where mum was at home and dad was at work. So there are all, I guess, these added pressures, but we are a nation or a world where we want things now and we want things quick, and we're used to getting it that way. So convenience and fast food and prepackaged food is another part of that. It's just something that we need to be more aware of.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's about creating the headspace to learn to have health as a practice. So it's something, you know, I mean, some people learn how to play, I don't know, the trumpet, or, you know, they have a hobby, and it's almost like health needs to be a practice that it's not necessarily a hobby, but it's a life-saving habit, you know, and it takes some time to actually understand what we as individuals need to do to make us healthy, because we are all different and we all need slightly different approaches to our lifestyle and the way in which we eat. And we need to learn that. And that can take time. So it's about being able to create the headspace, because as you say, you know, we're rushing around, food can be bought in a convenient way. We don't have to think too much about it, but we do, I feel, need to create headspace, just a small amount of time, to really get the learning of how we eat and what we eat in the muscle, so we know what's going to protect us and keep us going into, you know, later years feeling healthy and happy, without disease, you know, without being in a disease state.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, sometimes we are very trusting that, you know, if it's a food and it's for sale, then it's just got to be good. And sometimes we have to actually, you know, turn it over, look at the ingredients, and that only takes, you know, 30 seconds, but we do have to make a conscious and an educated choice on what we're putting in our body, and sometimes maybe not be so trusting of, you know, whatever's out there is going to be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And just also recognize that, you know, I think something that's not that it's, well, it's a little bit related, but the idea that, you know, a lot of people are sort of going vegan these days, and you know, they're buying things that are in a convenience package, and very often these vegan foods are just as processed, you know, as the sugary stuff. There's very little goodness in it, you know. Again, it's just try to keep it simple, just make it real whole foods, and ideally if you can, not in a packet. And that's the rule, you know. I just think, but you're right, look at the back of a packet, and if there's something on there that you just do not recognize or cannot actually pronounce, don't have it.
Yeah, that's it. Opt for an apple or something, a whole food instead. Yeah, now, before definitely. We finish up, I just want to, I ask all my guests, if there is one piece of health advice that they would share with listeners, that listeners could go away and start instigating today, what would it be?
That's a difficult one. Just one. I looked at that and I thought, oh gosh, is it just one thing? I don't know whether, can I have two?
You can have two.
So the first one I think is stress management is really, really important. So if there's one thing that if you can go away with today, if there are two things, the first thing is, you know, stress. You've got to think, how are you feeling? You know, are you sleeping well? Are you able to have the headspace to, you know, to not to feel overwhelmed? Is stress is stress something in your life? And if it is, find a way to begin to start to manage it, because that in the long run is the reason for so many hormonal imbalances in our lives, I think. So stress management is a huge one. And then secondly, nutrient dense foods. Look at a food, if you're going to eat it, and ask yourself, is it nutrient dense? Has it got any nutrition in it, or does it not? If it doesn't, think about putting it back on the shelf, or, you know, not eating it, and think, you know, because it's very simple. Nutrient dense food is real whole food. It doesn't come in a packet. Just start to think about eating nutrient dense food. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I think they're two great things that people can just, you know, go away and do straight away. And yeah, nice and simple and easy, but definitely can obviously make big changes in people's health.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I do think that, we're busy. Life is all about convenience, and it's very difficult. You know, I make it sound very simple, but it's not. You know, it's a learning. It's a habit that you've got to learn. And there are various aspects. It is a holistic, we've got to take a holistic approach to our health. And there are lots of different aspects that we've got to bring together to make things feel cohesive. And to put us in a place where we're in balance and, you know, and happy and healthy. And that takes a little bit of time. It is a skill that has to be learned. And I just think that does take a little bit of time. So whilst I'm simplifying it, you know, we do need to take some time to sit down and think, well, okay, what do I need to feel happy and healthy and balanced?
Yeah, totally agree. Now, where can listeners reach out and connect with you and, you know, find what you do?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm on Instagram and Facebook as The Health Creator. So Instagram is the_health_creator. And I think Facebook is The Health Creator. That's my page. And then my website is www.thehealthcreator.co.uk. And if you wanted to reach out to me via email, just send an email at hello@thehealthcreator.com. And my name is Karen Mannion.
Amazing. Well, I'll link all that in the notes too, so listeners can definitely head there and be able to reach out to you. But thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure having you on. And it's been a really great episode because we've covered a lot of different things. You know, we dived into women's hormonal health and how that can move into fibroids, but also just general sort of health and lifestyle practices that can really support our health. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Kate, so much for having me. I'd definitely have to think twice next time, starting at 7:30 in the morning. I didn't realise I wasn't such an early morning bird, but there you go. it's been such a lovely pleasure, and you've got such a gorgeous smiley face, so that makes it all worthwhile.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.